Hey, that's the Wayne Eddy Affair theme on KYMN Radio, Northfield, Minnesota, the home of cows, colleges, and contentment. Well, it's a Wednesday morning. Holy cow, we're halfway through the month of April, thank goodness. It is April 18th, and the year is 2018. And yesterday, Jeff Johnson had the former Northfield Police Chief, Mark Taylor, on the air. And Mark stuck around and chit-chatted with me for a while. Well, today, David Bly was in studio, as he is every Wednesday morning, to report what's going on Capitol Hill and St. Paul. And David and I had discussed that we were going to get together and continue a chit-chat that we started a while ago. And so he says, Wayne, I apologize. I think I owe you an hour. And I said, yeah, you do. If you want to do it right now, we can do it right now. And he said, well, I have to let my wife know, and then we'll go from there. So, David Bly, welcome to the Wayne Eddy Affair.
Hello there.
And you're used to sitting in that seat. You know how to work the mic. Everything's cool. Everything's great. And Jeff evidently covered all of the stuff that's going on at the state capitol. And I know you only do it in like 15 minutes. Yeah. But if you got more you want to talk about in that regard, have at it. But then we'll talk about you.
Okay. All right. Well, I don't have a lot to add. There's not a lot that's really happening at the moment. I mean, next week, hopefully, I'll have more to report. Things are moving along. I'm expecting people saw in the news that former Speaker Paul Thiessen was given a position at the Supreme Court in Minnesota. So that was interesting news to hear. He's a friend. I admire his work, and I was glad to see he got that position.
And what did he do for a living?
Oh, well, he's an attorney.
Yeah,
but
aren't
he was
they all?
Not all of them. I'm not an attorney.
Okay,
but he was a House representative from the South Minneapolis Richfield area.
Okay,
and he represented that area since 2002, something like that, and became Speaker of the House in 13 and 14. So. Did a good job.
And he would be a Democrat.
Yes.
Okay. Do you remember, it was a great day. You might even have been there. I don't know. But there was a woman from St. Olaf College that was appointed to the Supreme Court in Minnesota. And they held the introduction of her at the Old Main.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Great.
And I remember there was a lot of media there. And I came up in my Bronco when I had those with the call letters all over it. And I stretched a mic cord all the way up to where the introduction was going to be made, put up a stand and the microphone, and asked the MC, whomever that may have been, to, you know, make sure to talk directly into this mic. We're broadcasting it live and in color. And when I went up there, I was doing my, you know, cable work and all that. And she comes out, and everybody's, ooh, here she is. And then she goes, hi, Wayne. And it was a woman that was much younger than me. And they had listened to the family listened to KYMN radio, especially for the snow and the school closings.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah.
And all the other media kind of looked like, well, what's the deal, this little guy from North? So, and I'm not going to remember her name, and I apologize.
Yeah, well.
And I know you're a St. Olaf grad.
I am.
And you went to that cool school. Do you know which one? The one that you went to? At St. Olaf?
You mean the Para College?
Yeah. Which was brand new at that time, wasn't it?
It was about a year or two old, yeah.
The name Bly was in the news recently, and I can't remember who, what, and why. And I said, next time I see David, I'm going to ask if that's a relative. Have any of the Blys been in the news that you can recall with your last name?
Well,
it was a positive thing.
Yeah. Well, that's good.
Yeah.
Right. The most famous Bly that I know of is Robert Bly, who is, you know, a poet and writer. He's getting on in years. Other than that, no, I don't recall that.
I think it was he that was appointed, maybe the Minnesota Poet Laureate.
Yeah, that and that happened several years ago. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, so we now maybe retired. You know.
Yeah.
But there was a name in the news. That Bly name is pretty popular. I had never heard of it until I got to Northfield. And your father was a professor at St. Olaf?
My father was a reporter. He was in the news media, and he did the news bureau at St. Olaf. He also worked briefly at Carleton. He also worked at the Northfield News with Maggie Lee many years ago. So, but he started out in some small town papers like Tracy and Winona, and went to Dubuque and became the night editor at the Dubuque Telegraph Herald, which is still going strong. And then came back up here to Northfield to take a job, hopefully to take a job at one of the colleges. He didn't make much money as a reporter, and he knew that the only way he'd get us into college is if he could take advantage of the tuition, the free tuition that they gave to their employees. So that's what he did.
And well, how does that work? Free tuition for their employees?
For the kids of their employees.
Oh, you know, okay.
So he knew that if I wanted to go to St. Olaf, if he was working there, then I would be able to go tuition free.
That's a pretty good deal.
It was, yes. I'm not sure if it's still in place, but yeah, it was a very good deal.
And you grew up in Northfield.
Yes.
And did you at that time think, well, I'd rather go to Gustavus or get out of town?
I did apply to several other colleges, but St. Olaf was the only one that accepted me.
So. Really? And you admit that?
Yes.
Okay. Because your dad worked there?
Probably.
Okay.
Probably, yeah.
And then you were one of those individuals that kind of wanted to go your own way, and that's when they developed a
Right. I thought it was very interesting. It was an in that time period across the country, there were a lot of colleges with experimental colleges looking at different ways of delivering a college education, and the Parrott College was designed in part by Al Finholt and some other professors who thought it would be good to have some research and development going on at the college. You know, he's had his 3M background, so he was interested in that kind of research and thought it would be helpful for the college to let professors try things that they were difficult to try in the classroom elsewhere. So researched very well before they started it. They looked at the Oxford-Cambridge kind of tutorial process where it was a little bit more relaxed with you when you were learning from the professor and designing a course of study that you would want to follow rather than a traditional path that was laid out for you. And I thought that was very interesting, and I very much wanted to be a part of that.
We're talking to David Bly, not Representative David Bly, but the personal David Bly. You went to Parrott College with somebody else that is in Northfield right now. And who am I thinking of?
Well, Paul Hager.
I thought that in my head, but I didn't want to say it in case. I was Paul Hager.
Yeah.
And former mayor of Northfield.
That's right. Paul Hager and I worked on a film together. I wrote the script, and he did, that was kind of his expertise, so he made this film. It was a lot of fun to do.
Was it a video or a film?
It was a film.
So that's quite a while ago.
Yeah.
And it would have been a lot cheaper if you could have done it in video.
Yeah. But I don't know if you remember Arch Leon, who was the art professor at St. Olaf, who also did animation and film and things like that.
So he was the advisor. Doug Leon's father? The guy from the water department that retired?
I don't know that.
Okay.
It could be. I'm not sure if there's a connection there. Arch Leon had worked at Hanna-Barbera, animators.
Yeah,
years ago before he became professor at St. Olaf. But the film was based on a kind of poetic script that I'd written, and so it involved. So it was not like a normal film. It was an experimental film in the sense that it didn't follow a story and have dialogue. It was more, there were little bits of story in it, along with images and things like that, but a different kind of expression than you'd normally find in a film.
Was that your thesis for both of you? Or you got credit for it.
Yeah, yes, we did. Yeah, it was a project we did, yes.
Okay.
I had a couple of other things I worked on that became my, which was a senior thesis, yes. One, I did a collection of poetry, and then I also did a study of modern American poets that
Did you go to school with President David Anderson?
Yes, David Anderson. He also was in the Parr College, too.
You know, I'm thinking that I try to remember, but I don't like the show to be about me. I like it to be about other people, but there's always a connection. And I'll have people come up to me and they'll say, "Hi, Wayne." And I'll look at them and I'll say, "Hey, you know what? Good to see you again, but refresh my memory." Mm-hmm. "Well, Wayne, you talked to me for 2 hours." And I say, "I've done over 1,500.
I know.
And, but when you start talking, just like you're doing now, it comes back. You know, David Anderson, Paul Hager went to that paralegal college there. I always liked the stories about Al Cui. You know, when he went to college, he was in during the whatever era it was, just after, I think, the Second World War.
Yes, right.
He was a pilot.
Oh, yeah.
And to impress Gretchen, his late wife, he flew upside down over the campus.
Is that right?
Imagine doing that today.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what. So what are some of the projects you're working on in your own personal life?
Well, you know that I had I've written this book about it's called We All Do Better, borrowing from Senator Wellstone, but the idea that if we focus on making sure that everyone has opportunities and can move forward, it actually creates a better economy than if we just focus on people who already are doing well. So that's one project I'm working on and trying to have more opportunities to talk about that idea. I'm also, every year I do a small book of poetry and send it out to friends. I'd like to do some more work on poetry. I have a couple of ideas for some novels I'd like to get working on, too. I've kind of written a little bit of a couple pages of those, but those are things I'd like to do, and maybe I'll have the time to do them once I retire.
When you say novel, many years ago when KYMN Radio was out in the country, there was a guy, and I'm not going to remember his name, who had written a novel.
Uh-huh.
And when you read it, it was taking place in Northfield, but it didn't say Northfield.
Uh-huh, sure.
And you'd recognize the various stories about buildings or streets.
Sure.
And individuals within the community.
Yeah. Was that Eric Larson?
Yes.
Yeah,
thank you. Wow.
Yeah.
That's exactly who it was. Yeah. Did you read that novel?
Yeah. It was
and
very
did
good.
You recognize the people in it?
Yes, I did.
And he didn't use real names.
No.
And that's when I came up with the question, what is a novel?
Uh-huh.
And I've stumped some people when I ask that. What's your interpretation of what a novel is?
Okay, well, it's something that has developed over time. You know, years ago, people wrote stories or whatever. If you're asking me, is a novel, you know, what is fiction in a sense? I mean, when we write novels or when people write novels, they borrow from their own life experience in order to do it, but they will create something new that's and different from, even if they're not naming the people or naming the town the same, they can't help but draw upon their own experience in order to have something to write. I think different writers have different goals in their writing and some may start with an idea or a theme or something they want to get across. Others will sit down and allow the story to come forth from and pay attention to what's happening in the story and perhaps maybe in rewrites of the story focus or shape the idea into something that's more communicated to people. So the goal of a novel in many cases is to try to not only tell a story, but get across some idea, something that that they believe strongly about, but and feel that maybe it's a better way of saying it. I remember once when I was doing my interviews, I interviewed a writer, John Ralston Saul, a Canadian, who he's actually the head of PEN, which is an organization that helps journalists and writers who are living in oppressed countries and making sure they can continue to write. But he talked about how he'd written a lot of political books where he tried to get across ideas, and he said, but the way to really do it is to write a novel, because you have the freedom to, you know, make up a story. And, you know, neuroscientists will tell you that story is the way we organize our brains, you know, that it's a story is something that we're used to communicating with. And you know this because you're a storyteller, and also an enabler of storytellers. You ask questions that lead people to tell those stories. It is how we communicate our ideas and our feelings and emotions and all of that. I think a novel gives you more freedom to move around and, you know, include emotions and insights that people have and get inside people's heads and tell what they're thinking, as well as what the other characters might be thinking. So it's a freer way, in a sense, of being able to write about something that you care about, and maybe even include your unconscious, the way that you learn about yourself or reveal something to yourself that you weren't aware of. Which can be very interesting, too.
Okay, that's a very good explanation. And now somebody says, hey, I read your novel today, and I never did that. Here's the way it really went. And they know that, you know, that they're being, it was them that the novel was talking about.
Yeah, exactly.
And that Larson fellow that you mentioned was living in New York, and my wife Julie and I, in 1988, went out to New York, and he said, if you're ever there, you know, come visit me. And so I did. I'm sure he was very surprised. And he had two daughters, teenage daughters, and he and his wife and his two daughters lived in a walk-up, I guess they call it,
mm-hmm, yeah.
And they had rent control.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was very small, and inside there were four bikes inside the small apartment.
Sure.
And he didn't have a car. So then he took us on an excursion to the Chinatown and pointed out places to go. As a matter of fact, we ended up on World Trade Centers back then.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm glad you remember his name, Eric Larson. He had a sister in town that I knew at the time, but she had been married and had a different last name. And I'm not going to remember what it was, but I knew that character in that book.
Oh, yeah.
Interesting. 922 on 1080, you're listening to The Wayne Eddy Affair. My guest this morning is a gentleman that we're all familiar with. As a matter of fact, I have to thank him. He stayed over after his interview with Jeff Johnson. David Bly is my guest.
Night run to the store for a loaf of bread. What you got was a minor fender bender instead. I'm State Farm agent Mark Quinnell in Northfield, and I know that accidents can happen anytime. That's why we give you 24-hour good neighbor service, so night or day, help is just a phone call away. For your insurance and financial needs, phone me, State Farm agent Mark Quinnell, at 645-4545.
Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
This is the sound of every home run Minnesota Twin Brian Dozier hit in 2017. It's a sound you'll hear even more in 2018. And as a season ticket holder, you'll get a lot more than that. From choosing your own games to savings on tickets, concessions, and merch, and even access to pregame field passes, you'll get the most out of the season. That is the ultimate fan experience. This is how we baseball. Get your season tickets today at twinsbaseball.com.
Have you ever felt like your business has been tripped up by your bank? Friends in Bank and Trust understands how to be a financial resource for all types of small and large businesses and how to finance them. You might say that we are the best kept secret in business banking. Friends in Bank and Trust. the bank that comes to play.
Contact your local Franzen and Bank and Trust office at franzenbank.com. That's FRANDSEN Bank.com.
Member FDIC.
Yes, they are, because it's a beautiful day today in regards to the fact that we're alive and have
and
something
snowing,
to look forward to. Isn't that important in life? Something to look forward to, don't you think?
Oh, yes. Yes, very much so.
And I've been asking you about what you're looking forward to, and you have your plate full in that regard. I was going to ask you, in regards to poem, maybe you can help me out. I am probably thinking more of limericks, but it seems to me that poems have to rhyme. And I read poems that have no rhyme or rhythm to it.
Sure, sure.
And I'm going, how can they call this a poem? Well, I'm not educated in that area. There are different names for different writings. Do you literally write something that does rhyme and have a rhythm?
I have written poetry that has a rhythm and rhyme. It's not the usual way that I write, but I think as with any art, artists go off into different ways to try to personalize or say, this is my style, this is what I do. And over the course of the history of writing poetry, different poets have advocated for different ways of expressing poetry. And, of course, it changes the idea of what poetry is, and poets will argue about whether or not you're really a poet or you're not a poet or whatever. And so there is something called free verse, which is a poetry that may pay attention to sounds, may pay attention to line length or various ways that you can shape the poem, but it doesn't necessarily pay attention to strict forms, as, for instance, Shakespeare's sonnets, which have a prescribed number of lines and stanzas and a meter, which is what you're talking about with the rhythm. And the iambic pentameter is what Shakespeare used. And what that means is that there are five collections of syllables that imitate iamb, which is where the iambic comes in. You know, I am, I am, I am, I am. That's the rhythm. It gets established that way. And even within a line of poetry, that you would, they say they scan it, you know, that you figure out what the rhythm is, there is variation, you know, and sometimes that adds emphasis. It means that when you, instead of following the pattern, you changed just a little bit, it causes your to pay attention to what that word is or what that word's doing. So those are tools that poets might use to make their poetry more interesting or more dynamic in some ways.
Do you think that only poets can appreciate a poet?
Well, I hope not.
It's just an open question.
Yeah, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Because they'll have readings.
Sure.
And I just have never gone and sat down in a chair and had somebody stand up there and read their work. And many people do.
Yes.
And they're in awe. And they stand in line to get a signature. And I'm going, well, the vast majority of people don't do that.
Right.
Is it kind of like a snobby
world?
Well,
I think we talked earlier about Robert Bly. Robert Bly was very interested in changing poetry of his day, which was more academic and intellectual. And, poetry was something that scholars wrote or English professors wrote, and you studied in English classes. And he was very much interested in trying to make poetry more, not necessarily more popular, but more open for people of all walks of life to enjoy. And in fact, if you look back in history at writers, poetry was enjoyed by many, many people. The Bible is full of poetry. You know, perhaps the most popular and most read book in the world is the Bible, and it's got lots of poetry in it that people enjoy reading and get nourishment from. You know, so his idea was try to use the vernacular, try to use the language that people speak, and try to understand how you, within that, limitation, can you make it interesting? Can you make it musical? Can you help people be drawn into the poetry? Another movement in poetry kind of started with Ezra Pound, an American poet who spent most of his life in Europe and then got in trouble because he gave radio lectures in favor of Mussolini.
Oh, yeah, that's bad.
That's not a good idea. Yeah. Anyway, he started what would be called a school of poetry, which would be identified as imagism, or the image, and focusing on the things that you're describing and creating a picture with words, as which you can create in your mind as you listen to it, as opposed to so much attention on the music or the rhythm and all of that. So
when they have the contest each year to write some poetry
on the sidewalk,
for the sidewalk thing, I entered that one time. I had no response whatsoever. Like, hey, thanks for entering, but it sucks. And when I...
I'm sure not. But.
And when I read the ones that are on the sidewalks, I'll give you how I should have written it. The hummingbirds fluttering over the beautiful sunflower seeds of the God-given sun. You know, and the water is flowing and the birds are chirping and a waft of love falls through the air. And I'm going, what? And it's short, obviously.
Yeah, yeah, yeah,
but
yeah.
It seems to be more, it isn't rhythm and rhyme.
Right, right.
Period. It's a thought process put on cement.
Yeah. Well, you are, as we were just talking about the images, I mean, a lot of them is an image, a captured image that provokes you. But and then they'll add something, as you were also in your imitations of these, something that takes you further. You know, the Chinese poetry, which I can only read in translation, so I don't know what. You know, but some have said that because they use ideographs or characters to create language, written language, it made their poetry more imagistic, or more, you're creating these images that you tie together that have an effect on you, and you have an emotional reaction, a response. So if you looked at some of the early poems that Robert Bly wrote, he would write, about snow on the ground and a empty grain elevator or something like that, and because you're, it's put in a certain context, it gives you a kind of feeling, whether it's the barrenness of the landscape or whatever it might be, and you might, maybe it would make you feel some sadness or some depression or whatever, contemplating that image, and then the idea is that you have something that lifts you up at the end that's also striking, but another image.
That's what I did. I did it about the James Younger game, and I thought, and I can't repeat it right now, but basically it was in the style you just described, about how they had come to town and how the townspeople had defeated them.
Yeah.
But I did it in a more melodic way, will. And I thought, well, if tourists are here in town and they're walking along the sidewalk and they stop and they see that, what a great connection to our community. Hey, that's right, there's a historical, I thought it would be a good feeling tourists,
Wayne,
or pride for the locals.
Sure. Maybe you shouldn't give up, Wayne. Just keep trying,
Yeah. Well, I'm going to keep trying talking to you, and I'm going to take a brief break. I know you only can spend another half hour with me. We'll be back in a flash.
It's a sure sign of spring. The Northfield Hospital Auxiliary Book Fair is coming. Get ready to browse through over 65,000 books, DVDs, CDs, and vinyl. The Book Fair raises money to support projects for Northfield Hospital and healthcare scholarships. This year, Book Fair sales will hit $1 million in total sales. The Book Fair opens up Tuesday, April 25th and runs through Saturday, April 29th. Mark your calendars for Tuesday, April 24th from 5 to 9 p.m. Wednesday through Friday, April 25th through 27th from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. On Friday, all items are half price. And Saturday, April 28th from 8 a.m. to 3 p.m. It's $5 bag sale day until 12:30 and free books from 1 to 3. Got books to donate? Drop off your donations at the Ice Arena until April 21st. On weekdays from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. On Saturday, April 14th from 9 to 1. And Saturday, April 21st from 9 to noon. Follow Auxiliary Book Fair on Facebook or visit NorthfieldHospital.org for details.
The Army National Guard is offering up to a $20,000 enlistment bonus and other tuition benefits to qualified candidates, including new recruits and those with prior military service. Already received your education or are currently in school, you may be eligible for up to $50,000 in student loan repayment. Get the education you need to land the career you've always wanted. Learn more about the many benefits that come with serving part-time in the Army National Guard. Visit NationalGuard.com today. Sponsored by the Minnesota National Guard. Aired by the Minnesota State Broadcasters Association and this station.
And the station is KYMN Radio out of Northfield, Minnesota, 1080 on your AM dial, 50 years old on September 27th of this year, and of course now the 195.1 FM. It's 933 and 1080 radio. We have State Representative David Bly in studio, but we're talking David Bly, not any Minnesota business. And you've brought up something quite interesting. We're talking about poetry, and I should have a little bell here. And every time you use a word that I don't, well, I understand it in the context of your presentation, but I should ding. What is that word? Like I have a Kindle. And when they use a word, you can put your finger on the word. That is so great. I actually read the paper, and I go, oh. And I go, well, I can't do it to the paper. Boy, does it come in handy.
Yeah.
I learn them, but I don't use them as much. But you brought up the idea that some poetry that is very popular, that I didn't realize it's poetry, didn't think of it that way, and that is
rap.
Yeah. Do you have a rap singer or rap presenter or whatever they're called that you're familiar with at all? Big Bo Daddy? Or?
I don't follow rappers that closely myself, okay. But I know when I hear it, I recognize that that's a form of poetry.
Yeah.
There are now contests that young people get involved in that are called, you know, live poetry or poetry slams, they call them. And that's a lot of what it's like. There's a kind of playfulness with language, but there's, you know, very pointed and trying to make a point or emphasizing an idea or a thought or an emotion and expressing it with words through a kind of rhythm. And
good.
It's interesting.
Observation. Who is your favorite poet?
I really admired Robert Bly a lot, so I learned a lot from him as a poet. In fact, when I was first teaching out in Milan, Minnesota, I lived 18 miles from his farm, and I used to go over and visit with him often, and we would talk about poetry and different things. But
what relation to you was he?
Well, I would say we're pretty distant related. I mean, okay. Our families came over from the same village in Norway called Blaya.
Okay.
At different times came to the United States. I think his family originally settled in Illinois and then came to Minnesota. My family came straight to Minnesota from Norway and settled in Ruthven, Minnesota.
Where's Ruthven?
It's near Pipestone in the south west corner.
Yep.
My grandfather had been a kind of civil servant in Norway, but really got into farming, but he was a very scientific farmer, everything by the book, you know. The one thing that he did was different. He didn't paint his barn red, he painted it blue. So
that is good. You know, I do have, and I don't know why, well, when you hear it, you'll know why, but when I was in probably a freshman in high school, and they came out with all this Shakespeare stuff and all that, and I wasn't very attentive, but I was attentive to, like, bells, bells, bells.
Edgar Allan Poe.
Yep. And maybe it's because they told us the background of Edgar Allan Poe that I thought, oh, well, this is, you know, because he was a ne'er-do-well. and he was a dark poet.
Yes.
And you'd try to figure out what the heck is he talking about. When you get it, it's kind of neat.
Yeah. He is a very interesting writer in the sense that he studied writing like you and literature like you would a scientist, in the sense that he said, what are people wanting to read? So he invented the mystery story. He kind of invented science fiction too. And so he developed ways that would catch people's attention and sell his stories in magazines.
Was there one about blackbirds?
The Raven. Is
the Raven. Yeah,
yeah. 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 And I think when he wrote his poetry, he wrote it for people to read, you know, so a wide audience, not just scholars. And, he paid a lot of attention to sound. And you can hear it in the bells, and other poems as well. The repetition of Nevermore in The Raven.
Do you know what follows bells, bells, bells?
I can't remember. No.
Hear the brave alarum bells.
Mm-hmm.
Why do I remember that?
Yeah.
22 minutes before 10 o'clock, David Bly, my guest here on the Wayne Eddy Affair on KIM. My next hour, I'm going to be emphasizing music from 1974. I just pulled it out because I went into my little den and just picked it out. Oh, 1974. Where were you in 1974?
Well, in 1974, at the beginning of 1974, I was finishing up St. Olaf. And I actually finished my college career in January of 1974, and then came back for graduation later on in May. But I did a little bit of traveling that year and came back. And
where?
Well, I think I went out. I'm trying to remember exactly where. I think I went out to California and visited my friend who I'd met, who was an ABC student, Rod Little. And then I went to Massachusetts and New Hampshire and visited family and friends there. This was a couple years after several years after my father had died, and I wanted to kind of touch base with some of those folks. But
in a car?
Well, when I went to California, I hitchhiked.
Isn't that something?
Yeah.
Did you have an experience at all with some of the people that picked you up?
Well, long conversations, yeah, but nothing, you know, good or bad necessarily. No, I mean, it was... You were a rider and trying to entertain them as we drove through the night. Actually, now that I think of it, we did stop one night, and I had one of those sleeping bags that you
roll it up.
Yeah, roll it up and you get inside, and it's like you're in a cocoon or something like that. You know.
Yeah.
And we were in near Reno, Nevada, and we stopped there. And I think the only thing that he said to me or something, you've got to be careful that a snake doesn't crawl into the
sleeping bag
with you. Which it didn't happen, but you know, it was an unusual experience.
You went into the motel.
Outside
of the car.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, and then the next morning you connected.
Yeah.
Wow, that's interesting. And I'll tell you what, I have done so much hitchhiking in my life, and now, when's the last time you saw a hitchhiker?
Yeah, I know.
And, well, here's how it goes now, is that, let's say that, I've seen it, you're on Highway 3, and somebody is walking, and you can tell by their clothes, perhaps they don't have a car.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you can't go up and say, would you like a ride? Because of all the information, Amber Alerts and all of that, if you try to do a good deed, they say, no, I'm, especially if they're walking fast, no, I'm exercising.
Yeah, right.
So I quit doing that.
Yeah, yeah.
And I remember one time it was raining, that sleet and snow, you know, and I was on, when I lived on the east side, and there was a young girl, probably 13 years old, that was walking in that all that stuff from Erickson's at that time. And I thought, I'm going to give her a ride. My goodness, this weather's terrible. And then I thought, no, can't do that, you know. They'll think you're a weirdo or something.
Yeah.
Oh, and we get off topic here. So You don't have any really great stories from the hitchhiking. You flew to New Hampshire?
Yeah.
Okay. And then did you continue your trip back to the West Coast or back to Minnesota?
I came back to Minnesota.
Okay. Yeah. Back home again? No, that's Indiana. So did you spend a year discovering yourself, as they say?
Well, I suppose you could say that. I was trying to figure out what would I do next, and I wanted to do some writing, but I wasn't really getting a lot of ideas, or it wasn't taking me anywhere that way. So I decided, I did get this degree. I got a teaching certificate. I'll start doing some substitute teaching. So I did some of that for a while, and then I decided I needed to look for a job, and so I did.
And down in what starts with a W or what?
Milan, Minnesota.
Milan. And where in the world is Milan?
Well, do you know where Montevideo is?
Okay, it'd be southwest of here.
Northwest of here. Yeah, almost to South Dakota.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
And so that's kind of where it is out there. Yeah, it's if you took I think it's Highway 40 out of Willmar. There is not a community between Willmar and Milan, and that's okay. That's almost 40 miles from there to there. So
that's Montevideo.
That's that Milan and Willmar is that
okay?
But it's about 18 miles, 20 miles from northwest of Montevideo.
And I get that mixed up with Monticello. Where is it?
Monticello.
Monticello.
Yeah, yeah.
That's, is that the one where the nuclear?
Yeah, that's Monticello. Yeah,
I almost bought that radio station.
You
there.
Did?
Yeah. Oh. And Julie and I went up and looked at it. It had some great property. And then it was an AM daytimer, like KYMN was at that time. And I looked over the town, and it seemed to me disconnected, like they wouldn't be interested in local radio because they're too busy traveling to the city and listening to the big boys.
Yeah.
And fortunately, Northfield has embraced the local radio station.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's too bad that we have two businesses that are closing down. Did you hear that on the news this morning?
No, I didn't hear it.
One is, Swag.
Oh, really? Okay.
And the other, I think, is a tattoo place.
Okay.
But Swag, have you ever been in there?
Yeah, I've been in there.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you have money.
Well, I didn't say I bought anything. I've been in there. It's when you're shopping, you take advantage of going into all of the stores.
She would write a column about some of the crazy, dumb things that people have come in and done or said.
Yeah.
And it was fun reading that, but when I go in there, all that stuff is so cool.
Yeah, it is.
I think, well, now if I had a big house, I could buy that and put it there because it would look really cool.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry to see them leave.
Yeah.
And 92 years old, the woman that owns the building and the business.
Wow.
So, good for her. 92 is, have you heard from Al Cui lately?
I have not. I'm trying to think of the last time I saw him. But no, I have not heard from him recently. Are you familiar with Norway House
on Summit Avenue?
Yeah, and they were doing some kind of benefit, and he gave a speech in favor of I think it was some legislation that we were trying to give them some money for their new building or whatever, and he spoke about that. But I can't remember if I've seen him since then.
Speaking about that. You mentioned California.
Yeah.
We dipped a little bit in politics by asking about Al Cui.
Mm-hmm.
There are people getting together in California that want to divide it into three states.
Yeah, I read that.
Three states.
Yeah.
Which would give them six senators.
Yeah.
Which would be somewhat overwhelming on the left side of the ruler.
Well, maybe. I mean, California. I mean, it has this reputation of being very progressive and left, but there are parts of it that are conservative. So maybe it would be divided. I don't know.
Well, how would you like to be a legislator in California when they pass the law about ignoring federal rules and regulations in reference to illegal aliens? How would you like to be serving on that legislative body?
Well, there are probably things in that legislature that I would agree with, you know. So, I mean, I know we don't share a lot of those political views, but it probably wouldn't bother me so much that, you know, through different times in our history, different states have felt that wanted to take a different path than the federal government too. So it's, and on the right and the left, it's not just one way or the other. But there are, you know, there are reasons that people have different opinions and ideas about that. I mean, if we looked at the issue of the driver's licenses that we talk about for undocumented people living here, one of the reasons that changed is because of 9/11, and we became afraid of strangers and people who come here. And it used to be possible for people who were documented or not to get driver's licenses prior to that. So it's something that's changed because of a response, you know, that, and, you know, should it have been a response that we made? That's debatable. You know, one person could argue about it. But I think when a driver's license is something that becomes so important to a person's life and being able to access certain things, it's difficult to deny them that. It's kind of in a sense something that being, you know, when you're a human being, you need to be able to exercise and be active in the world. And you know, there are cases, I worked with some of them when I was a teacher, young people who didn't come here by choice, but they were brought here by their parents.
Dreamers.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I have to say that I have an open heart and an open mind to dreamers, mm-hmm. no doubt about that. By the way, when you mention 9/11, I think the vast majority of the country isn't aware of it, but they were trained in Minnesota to do those planes.
At least one was, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, one
well,
was.
I'd like to.
And actually, the one that was didn't make the flight, so.
Well, don't get into detail. I want to keep them to be bad guys who trained. It's 11 minutes before 10 o'clock on the Wayne Eddy Affair. My guest this morning is David Bly. We'll be back in just a moment.
At Harry Brown's Family Automotive, everything is based on Brown family values, like being friendly, professional, and involved in the community. Right now, we've got a huge selection of vehicles, all American-made, every one of them. Check out that new 2017 Chevrolet, GMC, or Buick you've had your eye on for a while now. Also, we always make sure to peel off every inch of that sticky new car window sticker for you. Harry Brown's Family Automotive in Faribault. Online at harrybrownsgm.com.
The Connects Nurseries Garden Center on Highway 19 West in Northfield carries a huge inventory of perennials, shrubs, and trees for every landscaping need, including proven winners, color choice, flowering shrubs. Connects Nurseries in Northfield is open 7 days a week from April to November and features proven winners, color choice shrubs, so you can choose from the newest and best flowering shrub varieties. Shop Connects Nurseries in Northfield for the best selection, quality, and value, including proven winners shrubs.
We're back, and I didn't want to talk politics, David Bly, and we did just briefly here. We didn't actually talk, and we just looked at each other as we know where we stand in regards to different things, and I don't want to go there.
Yeah.
I want to talk about you, and you're going to retire from the legislature, and you're not going to go back to teaching or lecturing?
That's not my plan right now, to go back to teaching, no. I'm 66, and I'm ready to look for something new. I mean, maybe I'll join in your career. Maybe I'll go back to radio or something like that. Who knows?
When you say back to radio, what's your experience?
Well, just when I did the 6 months as a little program here for a while, talking about the economy. I don't know if you remember that or not. But
and you filled it for an hour?
I think it was just a half hour.
How did that go?
I enjoyed it. It was a lot of fun.
Were you always prepared?
Yeah.
I mean, did you have to put a lot of thinking into it? And it's not an easy job.
For what I was doing, yeah. It was. I think you have some skills that maybe perhaps make it a little bit easier for you, but I know you do a lot of work behind the scenes to find people to come on your program.
That's basically it.
Yeah.
And then once they're here, they're the star.
Yeah, yeah.
And some of them I know real well, and some of them I get to know for the first time real well.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's the fun part of this.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, absolutely.
And I goof up occasionally, have an open space, and I did have a couple people that said, you know, Wayne, when you don't have a guest, I really like the music you play.
Uh-huh.
And I thought, oh, well, okay. And to be a disc jockey again,
yeah,
it's kind of fun.
Yeah, I bet.
So you and your wife going to take some time off and go someplace, and don't go to Mexico on Sun, I'll tell you that.
we would like to go to Italy.
Oh, wow. So, yeah. A Norwegian wants to go to Italy?
Yes.
Is she of Italian descent?
No, though? She's actually of French descent.
Oh, oui. Okay. I'm half French.
Oh, you are. Yeah. So I'm a fourth French myself.
Are you? Yeah. Okay. I come from the Corsals on the French side, and the Caseys on the Irish side.
Uh-huh.
So what in Italy? Are you going to do the typical tourist thing, or is she going to study or going to write a paper about it?
We're interested in being tourists, I guess you'd say.
Okay.
It might be fun if we could find a place to stay for a little while that wouldn't be too expensive, to just, you know, spend some time in the countryside and get to know.
Countryside?
Yeah.
You don't want to get into Rome?
Well, we do, yes.
Yeah.
But, I mean, what I'm saying is, in addition to doing the regular tourist thing, it might be nice to sort of get a feel for what it's like.
A little B&B or something like that.
Yeah, like that, yeah.
Well, when you're there, I'll give you a heads up. When you meet people that speak English, you say, "Hi, I'm Tommy Tourist, and this is my wife, Susie Sightseer." My wife gets so doggone mad when I do that. I think it's funny. Mm-hmm. So that'll be, is it something you're planning to do for sure in an immediate future?
Well, I wouldn't say that the plans are formed yet, but it's something we both agree that we'd like to do, and we will be making plans.
Now, being 66 years old, I would imagine that you're retired and get your pensions and get your Social Security, and you can live.
Yeah.
And what about, and you'll get the Minnesota pension plan too as a legislator.
Yeah.
So that'll be good. And then you'll sell some of your poems. And that'll be great.
And although poets don't make much money from their poetry.
Unless they're Walt Whitman or...
Well, unless they go out and talk about their poetry and do poetry readings. Robert Bly, in addition to doing some translations and writing a couple books about society, he made most of his money by going to colleges and reading his poetry and, doing audience things.
But don't they get money for publishing?
Well, yes, but as you pointed out before, most people do not buy poetry,
Okay.
That's based on sales and based on the contract that you can sign with the publisher who might want to publish your poetry. And they do publish a fair amount of poetry in magazines, which they get a stipend for, but you have to be known. You have to be, in a sense, famous.
Understand.
So in order to get a
kind of like Comey and former State Department leader Hillary Clinton, they're on their tour right now.
That's right.
What was that little town you came from? Talk first
at Milan,
and from Milan you went to.
From Milan, I went to St. Paul. And I worked.
St. Paul.
Yeah, first I worked at the Sears store. You remember the old Sears store with the tower,
Yeah. Where was that located?
On Chicago and, is it Cleveland? No, not Cleveland. Chicago and.
Lake?
I'm trying to remember. Is it Cedar and Chicken? No,
I think
it is. You're right. It is Chicago and Lake. That's what it is. Yes.
Okay, that's Minneapolis.
That's Minneapolis, yes.
Did you live in St. Paul?
At the beginning of my career, I lived in St. Paul.
Then
we moved to South Minneapolis near Lake Hiawatha. I lived in St. Paul on Wellesley Avenue near McAllister.
Okay.
But then I moved from there to South Minneapolis, yeah.
And then what school was it you were teaching at there?
Well, I wasn't teaching then.
Oh.
I left Milan teaching. I went to school to study graphic arts. My dream in my head was to... write poetry and publish it myself, learn how to do that. Yeah. And I did learn how to do it, and I do print some books myself with my computer now. It's much easier to do. But I went from So I had to go to school and work, and that's what I'm saying, as I went to the graphic arts, Minneapolis Technical College. And then I worked at Sears in their business department for a while, and then they moved me to the catalog department. And then I got a job at Metropolitan Medical Center, where I worked in their mental health unit. And that was very interesting work.
Where was that?
It's right next to Hennepin General Hospital. Okay. If you remember, yeah. And after working there for a number of years, I worked at General Hennepin County General Hospital, where a lot of the folks who had difficulties with mental health came directly from, you know, the police would pick them up and bring them to General Hospital, and they would be in pretty bad shape.
Would that have been around the time that they closed all the mental institutions, like the ones in Faribault?
That could be, yeah. I mean, yes, there is a connection there. Yeah.
When you think about all of those people, and there's a book that a lady just wrote about the horrible things that went on in mental institutions. I went to the one that was in Cambridge when I was a senior in high school as part of our civic classes. I mean, and it was like going to a zoo, and I say that with tears, because they had people from all ages in, like, well, they were cribs, but they were cages to me. And then you think they closed all these places, and where do these people go?
Yeah.
Where do they go?
Yeah. Well, the plan was to have community services for them, and there were some cases where they would try to get permission to build a housing facility where these folks could stay, and the neighbors would all be up in arms. We don't want those people living next to us, you know. But there are some very good establishments where they do take care of people, but there are others where it's not so good. And if people don't have good and careful access to the medications they need and the help that they need, they're vulnerable adults.
We're a good community for showing that. That's the Laura Baker Services. Mm-hmm. They have three houses in three different neighborhoods, and these people are taken well taken care of. And then they go to the place out in Dundas, and then you see them at the
Epic.
And then you see them at
the grocery store.
And it's really like this morning I went to Encounter Foods, and I bet you three of them, hi Wayne.
Yeah,
and because I've known the kids for the people for years. So, well, it's getting to be 10 o'clock, David, and we really haven't gone through your life totally.
No,
regards to the interview, and I kind of steered away from that because I can squeeze you and do the detailed thing about where you were born, who your mom and dad is, grandma and grandpa is. And where you went to school, what it was that like. What high school did you graduate from?
Northfield.
And who was in your freshman and sophomore year or middle school, who were your health instructors?
Well, Arnie Nelson was my health instructor.
Okay. Yeah. He was a great guy.
Yeah, yeah.
And everybody wanted him to be on my show except Arnie Nelson. Same happened with Tom Porter.
Uh-huh, yeah.
His wife came up to me at church and said, Wayne, try again. And then look what happened to these two people.
Yeah.
So in junior high, you didn't have Domeyer?
No, I didn't have Jed Domeyer.
You were before them?
Well, he was teaching there.
Okay.
But I think I was fortunate to have Arnie Nelson as my health teacher. But
Arnie Giebel, remember him?
I do remember Arnie Giebel. Yeah,
did you play baseball?
No, I didn't. I ran track.
Well, we'll have to talk about next visit. I know you said you had an hour, you got to get going.
Yeah.
So thank you very much. I appreciated our visit.
Good.
All right.
Yeah. Thank you.
David Bly, just David Bly, the guy, has been my guest for the last hour. I boosted you to senator. State Representative David Bly.
House members would not take that as a compliment.
Okay. Right. So you're on your way to St. Paul
right
now.
Yep.
Thank you very much.
Yep.
All right, folks, it is 10 o'clock. You're listening to the Wayne Eddy Affair on KYMN Radio, 95.1 FM, The One, and 1080 AM for 50 years, almost.
Remembering Barbara Bush, Secret Meeting. I'm John Trout.
Maybe that's what politics does for you, draws you either apart or together. In our case, it drew us together.
Former President George W. Bush was asked to reflect on his mother's passing on Fox Business News.
Were you able to say goodbye?
Oh, yeah, yeah. In person and then on the phone. Laura and I went over to see her a week ago Saturday. And we had a wonderful visit. She was strong, lucid.
The public is invited to pay their respects as the late Barbara Bush lies in repose Friday from noon until midnight at St. Martin's Church, Houston, Texas. The former First Lady and wife of President George H.W. Bush died yesterday at age 92. President Trump confirms that a now-not-so-secret meeting took place between the U.S. and North Korea.
President Trump confirms in a tweet, CIA Director Mike Pompeo met with Kim Jong-un in North Korea last week. Meeting went very smoothly and a good relationship was formed. Denuclearization will be a great thing for world, but also for North Korea, end quote. Pompeo, who is also Secretary of State nominee, was helping lay the groundwork for a Trump-Kim summit, location and date yet to be determined.
There's Bob Costantini. An announcement moments ago finds Democratic Senator Bob Menendez stating he will oppose Pompeo to the post of Secretary of State. The NTSB says a preliminary examination of the blown jet engine of that Southwest airliner shows evidence of metal fatigue. One person was killed in the accident. This man, Joe Marcus, was a passenger on that flight.
Sat right by the window, right near the engine that exploded. So I kind of got a front row view of everything happening while it was happening. So we heard a big boom and everyone started screaming. The plane kind of went a little lopsided, oxygen mask dropped down, and yeah, it was kind of chaotic, but I was just trying to stay positive during the whole thing.
Today, in a separate incident, a bird strike forced a Southwest jet to make an emergency landing in Nashville, Tennessee. I'm John Trout.
Thank you, John. Boy, I'll tell you what would you have done if you had been seated in that jet when that window popped after the engine blew up? And that woman was being sucked out of the plane, and they were able to pull her back in, but unfortunately she died. But how would you have responded? I mean, put on your seatbelt right away? Start saying the Our Father right away? Or would you hold on to somebody who is going absolutely crazy and calm them down? Or would you be the one that's absolutely crazy and needed to be calmed down? And what would you do? I mean, that's the question. I remember being on a plane one time, and the thought came, you know, oh, it's going to crash. I thought, well, it'd be quick. And then I thought, well, at 35,000 feet, and you have to drop down to 10,000 just to get oxygen, it would be a long, like that plane, you didn't know when it was going to go down. And it'd be a long time holding on and gripping onto the handles, seat handles. Oh, I don't know. Well, I hope it never happens again. It is four, make it five. Well, let's give you the exact. It's 10:54. No, it's 10:04:58. There. Now it's 10:05. All right, I said I was going to play the top 10 tunes from the year 1974. Does that mean anything to you? This is the number 10 song. It's Billy Swan, and the name of the tune is I Can Help. And if you were enjoying it in 1974, you're going to be able to sing along with it. So here we go, ladies and gentlemen. Here's Billy Swan.
If you got a problem, don't care what it is. If you need a hand, I can assure you.